This is Wade's World, and we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people. Everywhere you go.
This is Wade Rathke. That means it's Wade's World. It's Friday morning, 9 o'clock. Welcome to KABF FM 88.3, www.kabf.org. We're live streaming. We're going to podcast this interview as we do every week on Monday or Tuesday for any of you who miss it. We're at KABF, 100,000 watts of people power broadcasting throughout Arkansas and the world. Wade's World, every week we talk to the most interesting people in the world. This week, we're talking to Stanley Keene. Stanley is a regional director, the regional director for the Latin American National Cooperative Business Association, and CLUSA, which is the Cooperative League of the United States of America, CLUSA. Stanley's been around this thing for a long time in Central America, and we're going to talk to him today about everything we're reading about the crisis in Central America around the fungus hitting coffee. Stanley, welcome to Wade's World.
Hey, good morning. It's great to be on your show, Wade.
Well, it's great to have you. So, look, give people some sense. You just got back. You've been down in Central America a lot dealing with the farmer-to-farmer program, trying to get on top of this fungus that's hitting coffee beans and coffee plants. Tell us what's really going on, Stanley.
Okay, right now, I'm with the National Cooperative Business Association, like you mentioned, Inclusa International. I work on the international side of cooperative development. And early on in 1988, in the Civil War of Salvador, I was doing cooperative development in non-traditional crop exports to the United States and different parts of the world. And coffee was one of the ones that we got involved with after the peace accords were signed. And so coffee is what America runs on. And recently, in 2012, I did an evaluation or an assessment trip into Guatemala and Salvador and Nicaragua to assess what was going on and what were the causes of this devastating coffee rust problem in Central America. And what I found out at that time was there are many factors that were causing the coffee rust. It was something, the rust was originated in Africa, and the spores were transformed, or they arrived in Brazil in the 70s, and those spores kept spreading. Brazil was the first one that identified the problem in Latin America. And then it moved up over the last, since the 70s, into Central America and Mexico. And it's been devastating to the farmers and the cooperatives that work mainly in coffee. But the fungus is really being caused by this climate change and extreme rain at different times of the year, and then followed by extreme heat conditions that create that perfect environment for the fungus to take hold on the coffee plant. The other thing that continues to be the issue is there are a lot of coffee plantations all through Latin America and in Central America and up into Mexico that are abandoned plantations. And by abandoned, they haven't really properly taken care of the plantations, the trees, and therefore they're weak. They haven't been pruned properly, and they haven't been provided with the proper shade. And then the other thing is that the varieties, through time, some of these plantations are 80 years old. So the plants cannot withstand extreme heat conditions, and they're weak, just like myself. The older I get, the weaker that I'm getting, you know.
We don't want to go there, Stanley. Let's keep on the coffee, you know. That'd be a whole nother show you and I could do. But so this fungus has been spreading, not necessarily because it's some new, you know, special virus of some kind hitting the plants, but because of climate change is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, that affects it mainly, and, you know, not proper care and not treating it like it should be treated. And so it started in Ethiopia, really, where it was first identified. Then it moved its way into the Western Hemisphere, you know.
And this is some of the best coffee-growing regions in the world in Central America, Honduras, Salvador, Nicaragua, I guess is trying to come on, Chiapas in Mexico, and, you know, Altura coffee beans are part of what you see in some of your fair trade establishments from Mexico. So this is hitting... hitting all those beans from cooperatives, and that includes a lot of fair trade operations, doesn't it, Stanley?
It sure does. It also includes, not to forget, all the organic certified coffee coming out of Central America, Mexico, and Latin America, as well as fair trade coffee. And it also affects Robusta beans, as well as we drink mostly Arabica beans, and we once in a while get into some espresso that's Robusta beans. They're two different varieties of coffee. And Robustas grow at lower altitudes and the Arabicas at higher altitudes. So it's affecting all the small farmers and all the communities. And it's devastating. And I got some figures here that I'd really... In Salvador, it's roughly has hit 74% of the plantations and the families, 70% in Guatemala. In Costa Rica, about 64% of the plantations have been affected. In Nicaragua, it's 37%, and in Honduras, about 25%. So you can see what's going on right now, which means that there is a reduction in the production and the yields from these coffee plantations, meaning that it's impacting tremendously on incomes in these communities and as well as labor, employment. And we're seeing what's happening now here in the United States with the influx of children coming in from Latin America, mainly from Central America, you know, because these families are devastated not only, you know, by the lack of employment, and so they have to look for a way out of these conditions.
I'm talking to Stanley Keene, who's spent 20 years in Latin America working with various cooperative projects for a number of organizations. Just to throw some more statistics out, Stanley, I read that the International Coffee Association believes this year we could face $500 million worth of damage to coffee crops in Central America, and 350,000 workers could lose their jobs in coffee production. And that goes right to the point you're saying about part of the migrant crises. Half of the 50 cities that most of the migrants are coming from are Honduras, for example. I've spent a lot of time in the coffee plantations around Macala and, you know, not far from the Salvador border. We run a fair trade coffee house in New Orleans called Fair Grinds Coffee House, and we've gone to visit some of the cooperatives that are flow certified and provide us beans at different times. And man, this is just what's it going to do to the drinker on the other end? It's bound to affect price. Yeah,
you betcha, Wade. Let me just I was down there and I was kind of shocked in 2012 because everybody was expecting, or the farmers were expecting, the prices to be going up because there was less yields. The yields were dropping in Central America, but, you know, the coffee price stayed real low, and that was in 2012. I'm talking about the price to the farmer. Okay?
Right.
And this year, the price escalated and went way high up, and you can already see it around any coffee-drinking place or Starbucks, any place you go to, and any food co-op you go to. And the reason for the spike in prices is because of the devastation that Brazil has had with a drought. So Brazil's production was way low this year, and they roughly produce about 59 million bags of kind of medium to low quality coffee.
Well, they're more a Robusta area, aren't they?
Yes, and you got it. And some Arabica, but, you know, this is what caused that price to go up, is Brazil has come in short on the production. So it's really not, it's helping a little bit of production coming out of Central America, but not as much as one might seem. I've noticed the price is going up, and everybody, their cup of coffee is costing a lot more this year than it was last year.
And just to help some of the drinkers, so when you were mentioning the point about espresso, what a lot of people don't understand is espresso comes mainly from Robusta beans, particularly in produced in Brazil. So when you have a cup of espresso, the odds are, because of the way the crema is produced by some kinds of Robusta beans, that's what you're drinking, not Arabica. But on the other hand, I know for those of us who are in the fair trade, and we do a fair trade coffee and chicory, and also a fair trade espresso, and we use Ethiopian beans combined with some Honduran beans to duplicate that crema at our coffee house. But now we're getting in the weeds. That's probably more complicated, but there's no way people are going to be able to still get a cup of Joe for a quarter. Those days are long gone, even if you're a... we've got Stanley Keene, who besides being the regional director for CLUSA, Cooperative, National Cooperative Business Association, and somebody who's worked for 18, 20 years down there in Central America, is also a patient, long-suffering guy. And we were talking about the coffee rust epidemic throughout Central America. Stanley, tell people what are we going to do next? I mean, those of us who have to drink our coffee and are worried about the devastation down there, prices are going to go up, but what are they trying to do to get ahead of this problem in Central America?
Well, the first thing, there's no quick fix, and there's no silver bullet. What we're looking at is assisting and working with the farmers to introduce new coffee varieties that are more rust-resistant to the fungus. And more resistant to the fungus, and also coming in with the reduced use of the synthetic fungicides that are copper-based that do damage not only to a lot of damage to the plant as well as to the soil, which is the soul of these coffee trees. And we're going to work hard with going back and adopting the grandfather practices that we've been reintroducing into Central America, of a lot of organic pesticides and fertilizers that really build up the energy in these trees, so they can withstand, you know, these catastrophic hits of climate change. And also, we're going to go and reteach the pruning techniques as well as controlled shade, because in Central America, the plantations are grown under a canopy of natural trees that help reduce the heat underneath underneath and in the soil where the coffee is being grown. So the shade becomes another important factor in being able to control it properly to get these plants online again, these new varieties.
And that's about the best definition of shade-grown coffee you'll ever hear, is what Stanley Keene just gave you. And how many years is this going to take, Stanley, though? I mean, even if they cut them all back, it takes 3 years or so to regrow, doesn't it? But to do some of this new stuff you're talking about, or old stuff, and revive it, what's the best hope, you reckon?
Okay, planting a new coffee tree is going to take 5 to 6 years to get some a decent production off that tree.
Mm-hmm.
So what the plan is right now that many farmers are going to be doing is rehabilitating the old trees, okay, planting new trees, and then we want to introduce some diversified crops that will get some quick income, you know, horticultural crops, some other shade trees that are like in Guatemala, introduce some Haas avocados and stuff where they can get some other long-term production that are not hit by that rust. So the whole idea is to get some income into these communities as quick as possible, because the employment, the devastation to employment is just amazing that they're not going to have any work. Nutritional issues that we're going to be dealing with in Central America are just amazing. And I can see right now that everybody's being more concerned about drinking that cup of coffee here in the United States. And I'm very grateful to be on your show, Wade, because it gives people more understanding of what these farming families are having.
Exactly.
Just to scratch out a life.
Well, and as a consumer, and let me jump on the soapbox with you, people have to demand when they go to drink coffee that it is fair trade certified, because that means it's coming from cooperatives. In all likelihood, if you're getting that coffee in the United States, that also means it's coming from Central America, where this devastation is so terrible that Stanley's talking about here in terms of family and community life and the ability to even have a crop in the future. And not desert the farms and even end up with a worse situation. You need to demand that fair trade coffee to support those cooperatives that are trying to rebuild, because they'll be trying to sell whatever they can and get that coffee up here. But without your support, God knows what's going to happen and what you're going to be drinking.
That's right, Wade. And fair trade gets the most value back to that farmer, the best price, you know. And they create that relationship, that linkage, from the consumer all the way back to the farmer. So fair trade and organic hand-in-hand with cooperatives is very powerful, you know.
And that's, you know, when we talk about fair trade, there's legitimate certifying agencies. I mean, God loves Starbucks, and it's done a lot in a lot of areas, so I'm not going to just, you know, trash them out here. But when they certify, they're certifying themselves. Well, let me tell you, if I got to certify everything and say, well, you know, if I did it, it's good, and if old Stanley did it, well, I'm not so sure. That's not the same as having an independent certification. And these cooperatives are going deep to have FLO, which is based in Germany, and others certify it. And they're going through the 3 years of proving that they used nothing but organic practices. And we got to support them, Stanley, particularly in this time. Stanley, tell us how people can support the work you're doing.
Okay, well, I'm glad you brought that up because you know, we have been working NCBA CLUSA International, and I would advise all the listeners to go to our website. It's called ncba.coop and check us out. But we have a strong relationship with VEGA, the Volunteers for Economic Growth Alliance, VEGA, which is the world's largest consortium of economic growth volunteer organizations, providing technical expertise in private sector development. And recently, we have volunteers that are headed to El Salvador from different parts of the United States to do work in cashew production and packaging and marketing and coffee production. And so we're always working with VEGA to look for volunteers, to seek volunteers that want to take an active participatory role in helping these communities and farmers in the coffee areas. You know, we're creating more marketing linkages with volunteers that want to sign up with VEGA.
Well, and here's the good thing about you being on this show, even with our interruptions and everything else, is with 100,000 watts, you can hear this show from Dumas in southern Arkansas all the way to Forest City in eastern Arkansas, throughout the whole rice-growing area of Stuttgart, all the way over to almost Van Buren on the western side and north, you know, almost to Missouri. So we got a lot of farmers listening to us, Stanley, and they may have stumbled onto this show. And VEGA and the kind of work you're doing, we could use some, you know, Arkansas boots on the ground to help in Central America. We've been talking to Stanley Keene, and we're going to talk to him again. This is sort of an abbreviated Wade's World because of our technical difficulties today. But Stanley has been a great guest. We would have liked to hear, and we're going to hear in the future. I know his number. We're going to track him down before he relocates to Salvador, and maybe talk about some of the other things he's been doing in the 20 years he's worked in international work. But this has been Wade's World at KABF, www.kabf.org, the voice of the people. Stay tuned for our next show, and with Wade's World, we'll be on with you again next Friday, 9 a.m., and we're going to talk about Lyme disease and what people are doing to deal with that. Thank you, Stanley.
Hey, thank you. I enjoyed being on your show.